evening, everyone. Welcome to the Simple Actions Group of Alcoholics Anonymous. My name is Graham Rutherford. I'm an alcoholic. For those who care to join us, let's open the meeting with the Serenity Prayer. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. Amen. The Simple Actions Group wishes to extend a warm welcome to all in attendance this evening. These premises are non-smoking. Our group is welcome to use this room and the restrooms exclusively, which are across the main foyer and up a small flight of stairs, kind of that way. At this time, please silence your cell phones. Also, we respectfully ask that those present please refrain from unnecessary moving around the room. This will keep distractions and disturbances to a minimum and allow everyone to listen uninterrupted. Just remember, the person next to you might be listening. This group practices the spiritual foundations of anonymity, singleness of purpose, and effective sponsorship. As a group, we believe that Alcoholics Anonymous provides alcoholics with a set of clear directions on precisely how to recover from the illness of alcoholism on the basis of simple actions. These actions are contained in the book Alcoholics Anonymous. It's the purpose of this meeting to carry that clear message and to focus on precisely how to recover from the illness of alcoholism on the basis of AA's simple actions. I'll now read the AA preamble. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of men and women who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution. Does not wish to engage in any controversy. Neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety. So welcome, everybody. The format of this meeting is an open big book step study. As a group, we recognize the power of one alcoholic identifying with another alcoholic, sharing their experience, strength, and hope from the book Alcoholics Anonymous. We encourage you to engage in conversation and ask questions after the meeting pertaining to the step discussed tonight. And so this evening really winds up this passage through the steps, and Patrick's kindly agreed to come and share his experience, strength, and hope on the second half of step 12. And that's what we're going to be looking at tonight. And so, without further ado, I'll just pass it over to Patrick, and he's going to read first of all. Thank you.
Thanks, Graham. My name's Patrick Lanier. I'm an alcoholic. My sobriety date's May 1st, 2009. My home group's the Principal's Group of Chesapeake. We meet on Tuesday nights. I'll put a little throw-in for there. It's on the corner of Kempsville and Greenbrier. Everybody's welcome to come. We're on 96. It's going to be the second paragraph. Suppose now you're making your second visit to a man. He has read this volume, and he says he is prepared to go through the 12 steps of the program of recovery. Having had the experience yourself, you can give him much practical advice. Let him know you are available if he wishes to make a decision and tell his story, but do not insist upon it if he prefers to consult someone else. Keep going.
Yeah, that's it. That's the paragraph.
All right. With me, for that, you know, I guess over, we already talked about the first visit and lending him a big book, not giving him one. A mistake that I've made plenty of times, you know. And but you know, you lend him the big book, and so then he can either return your big book or he can steal it, whatever he wishes to do. But then that, if he does decide to return it, that brings me on to the second visit. And you know, it says he has read this volume, and that's something that I sometimes, you know, I don't do, but it's definitely, you know, it's a direction that he has read the volume. I didn't read it to him. He decided to take that action, that willingness. And it says, you know, having had the experience yourself, I can give him a lot of practical advice. Having had the experience, now with the experience being that I've gone through the 12 steps, that, I'm not lingering on step four. I've taken the 12 steps, I've had spiritual experience. So now I can give him a lot of practical advice to what have worked for me in taking the 12 steps. And it also says, you know, let if he wishes to make a decision, not that, you know what, I think I'm going to sponsor you, so you're going to start doing, he makes that decision. Because I see that, you know, I've seen that happen a lot, and sometimes I want to do it. I tried doing it to an older lady just a couple days ago. She told me she already had a sponsor, but I tried, you know, and she, but, you know, she, if that person makes that decision and they want to tell me their story, that's something that I always don't really think, like, oh, I need to just start 12-stepping them and, like, let's go, instead of, like, sitting down and giving them some time so I can find out facts about this individual. And if he doesn't, if that person doesn't want to, that's a direction right there, definitely. But do not insist upon if he prefers to consult someone else. You don't have to work with me. Just get better. That's the main key. Thanks.
Thank you. Yeah, my experience is similar. You know, I will. I meet lots of people in AA. I typically meet them when I go to meetings. That's why it's a good idea for me to go to meetings, so I can meet other people in AA. Otherwise, I'm sitting at home thinking about my favorite thing, which is me and how I feel. And I can get really absorbed in that, believe me, up here in the pressure cooker. So going to meetings and just talking to guys, giving them my phone number, you know, people that identify themselves as new, and giving them a meeting list and just trying to be welcoming, you know, and sharing a little bit about what happened to me, about how when I drink, I can't control myself. I really like drinking, I like getting wasted, and I can't control it, and I know I shouldn't do it, but I just keep doing it. And that's really, it's as simple as that. I can't stay stopped on my own. I can stop, but I can't stay stopped. And once I drink, the magic happens, and it makes all of this horrible, disgusting failure human race, it just makes it all turn, wonderful, you know, and someone turns the color up, and I just feel a part of again. I feel like we're on the same wavelength, and you guys get me. And that's why I drink, because it changes the way I perceive reality. So anyway, like it, I talked to the guy about that, and if he's an alcoholic, he's going to be like, yeah, me too. and you know, encouraging him to read the big book. And then I usually invite the guy out for a coffee. Let's go to a meeting and meet me at Starbucks beforehand and let's talk. And probably 9.5 out of 10 of them, I never hear from them again. And I don't know if there's something offensive about me. I think it might be my accent. Or kind of they maybe think there's something wrong with me. But I mean, there is something wrong with me. But anyway, so usually I just never see them again. But now and again, somebody shows up, and I'm happy to share my experience. And my experience has been that really the solution to my alcoholism is to take these simple actions, a key part of which is doing these steps now. Let's start and do them together, out the book. And so that's really what I've got to share, is that's what really makes the difference between being obsessed with alcohol and not being obsessed with alcohol, with staying sober long term and not staying sober long term. And, you know, a lot of people in AA say you shouldn't give advice, but it says here that you can give them advice. And I'll advise the guy, I'll say, you should go to meetings. You should not drink today, no matter what happens. You should call your sponsor. You should get a sponsor, you know, and you should join a home group and participate in that home group. How about saying some simple prayers? I didn't believe in God when I came to AA, but just saying some simple prayers seems to have helped me over time. And I love what Patrick said. I'm exactly the same. And I had this conversation with a couple of people today. It doesn't really matter if you get help from me or Patrick or David or Kevin or John. The personality is not important. What's important is if you've got alcoholism, and when you get sober, when you stop drinking, you feel worse and you don't know what to do about that. The guys in AA have got a solution for that problem. We have a solution for that, and you can stay sober one day at a time until the end. So, you know, that's what's on the table here. One day at a time is I need never drink again. And it doesn't matter who takes me through the simple actions to get me to that point. Just the fact that someone's willing to do it. And that's what saved my life. Somebody being willing to do this. Somebody did this with me. some guy that was married, who had a job, a big deal job, and was really busy. And you know what? He took some time to do this with me. And that guy saved my life. So could I not do it for somebody else? I'm done.
Definitely. Thanks, Graham.
So these are the paragraphs. You've got them.
98, second paragraph down. It is not a matter of giving that is in question, but when and how to give. That often makes the difference between failure and success. The moment we put our work on a service plane, the alcoholic commences to rely upon our assistance rather than upon God. He clamors for this or that, claiming he cannot master alcohol until his material needs are cared for. Nonsense. Some of us have taken very hard knocks to learn this truth. Job or no job, wife or no wife, we simply do not stop drinking so as long as we've placed dependence upon other people ahead of dependence on God. Huh. I love that paragraph. You know, I was just talking to someone else about that because, you know, I've heard it from the beginning. You know, if you want to come to Alcoholics Anonymous and you want to find a girl, you'll find a girl. If you want to come to AA and you want to find a job, you'll find a job. If you want to come to AA and you want to get sober, you'll get sober. You know, and I truly believe that. And the thing is that I've seen it a lot, is that, like, you know, someone will get a sponsor, and the sponsor will give him a job, and then, you know, that's now his boss, and things get a little funny. They get a little funny, because now that guy's paying him, and really his dependence is falling upon his sponsor, that's his boss, that's also giving him a room to rent, and so, you know, that's really become his God. He probably couldn't get him to say that. And I see the same thing with, you know, guys finding girls in here and girls finding guys. I've seen it over and over again. And by me, luckily, it wasn't of any of my doing. It was God that did it for me. But my first 7 months sober, I didn't have a girlfriend. I don't know how that happened. I guess I just wasn't that good looking back then. Guess I really was wrecked when I came in the rooms of AA. But with that, you know, I was able to get a relationship with God. I really was. And then, you know, when I was able to fall into a relationship with a woman and it fell and crashed down upon my head, I was able to walk through that with dignity and grace because of the relationship I had with God. And so, you know, that's a big thing right there, is that, you know, if I put my work on a service plane, you know, what can I do? What can I do? What do I know? I like to think I know a lot about a lot of things, but I really don't. I know how to lobster. I know how to make a couple cocktails. I know how to serve cheesecake. And I know about the 12 steps. That's it. I need to keep it there. I really do. Not like, well, you know, I think you could get this job, and let me go help you find a job, and let's go to the unemployment office. I don't know about them things. Maybe you should open a bank account. Don't use a bank. You should use a credit union, because banks screw you. Like, those are, like, I don't know, dude. I have this sponsee that was asking me, should I move to Minnesota? And I'm like, I don't know. And it's okay for me not to know. I don't have the answers for everything. I don't know. And he's like, dude, I need you to tell me what to do. I'm like, I can't tell you what to do. Maybe you do need to go to Minnesota. If I tell you to stay here and everything crumbles, you're gonna blame me and Alcoholics Anonymous. You need to make your own decision on that. And all I can say is pray and follow your conscience. And so, I mean, that is the truth. And I like how it says, you know, some of us have taken very hard knocks to learn this truth. Job or no job, I can. You know, I might not have a job and everything sucks. I might be looking at going to prison for 4 years. Everything sucks. And my sponsor told me, you can get sober regardless. And maybe you might just have to carry the message behind the wall. And I didn't really like that. I was like, that sucks. But I wanted to get sober. And so, you know, I really did understand that when we talked about that. Thanks.
Thanks, Patrick. Yeah, I've definitely tried to serve people. And what that has looked like for me is, you know, I like people to think of me a certain way. And what's very gratifying for me is maybe, let's say there's maybe like a homeless guy came into the meeting, and then I could, like, one time I had a couple of times I got these guys to come and stay in my house for a while. You know, what I loved, my favorite bit of it, was going into the meeting with that person and everybody knowing that that dude was staying at my house and I was helping him, you know, because I'm really spiritual and good. And you guys wouldn't even talk to the homeless guy, and I've got him at my house. So therefore, I'm better than you. And, you know, that I've definitely done that. And it's interesting because the thing that stopped me doing that was resentment. And I know I've bored you guys with these stories before, but the one that comes to mind is the guy's living with me, and he's not working, but I'm going out to work every day, and he's staying at my house. And then I eventually had to throw him out because I cooked dinner one night. I go into the shower, I come out, and he's eating all the dinner, my dinner and his dinner. And so, and then he wants money and all that. So I throw, you know, I have to kick the guy out after a few days. I just can't stand it anymore. And then I see him at a meeting a week later, and he's sitting waving at me, and on his head is a beautiful cashmere hat that my aunt sent me for Christmas. He's like, "Hi, Graham." Yeah, and so the resentment of being treated like that, because that's how I treat other people, by the way. Drunk and sober, I'll treat you like that. I'll steal your wallet and help you look for it. So, you know, that's my character right there, and it's interesting being on the receiving end of that. I don't like it sober, and I get very resentful. I get a little flavor of how other people maybe feel being around me. Maybe that's why I didn't have any friends. Maybe that's why my sisters never called me for 10 years. Maybe they felt that way all the time they were interacting with me, because that's what I do, I use you. So being used by new people in AA kind of toughened me up a bit. When I first came to AA, I used to think my sponsors were really mean to the new guys. You know, they'd say things to me, offhand comments, and I'd be like, "They're horrible. How can they talk to these guys? I'm trying to save these guys." And I realize now that they were actually more in line with what we're trying to do here than I was. And if I want to take credit for the successes, then presumably I have to take credit for the failures. And there's many more failures if we're talking about people staying sober than there have been successes. So yeah, this is exactly what happens. The guy starts to rely upon me. So I want you to give me a ride to the meeting, I want you to give me $20, I want you to do this, I want you to do that. And so it's very freeing after a painful process just to be able to not do that. I have to tell you, they don't even ask me for $20 anymore. I think I must give off a certain, I don't know what it is. It's been a long time. Anyway, and like Patrick said, this bit here really confused me at the start. It says, "We don't stop drinking as long as we place dependence upon other people ahead of dependence on God." How do I depend on God? How do I depend on God when I don't believe in God and I don't have any experience of God? How can I depend on God? That's ridiculous. It just it's abstract to me. It's like saying, I don't know, I need to depend on something weird, you know. So, the great thing about AA is very practical program designed absolutely to bring me into a relationship with a power greater than me, aka God. So, so the wonderful thing that happened to me, like he said, I come to AA and I start doing these simple things, going to meetings, saying some simple prayers, and reaching out to new people the best I can, joining a home group, participating in it, taking the steps with my sponsor. And what happened, even though I didn't know it, and even though it took me a long time to recognize it, a long time to admit it, even longer to admit it, was that I was having an experience of God. There was a power greater than me working in my life, keeping me sober, and changing me, and changing the way I behaved. My behavior was better than it had been before, and I was not getting drunk. And that was a huge change for me. So that's the wonderful thing about Alcoholics Anonymous. This is a very, very practical program. It's not a confusing, difficult program. One of our co-founders said, let's not louse this thing up with Freudian complexes that may be of interest to the academic mind, but they've got nothing to do with our work here. This is very, very simple. It's so simple I almost missed it. By being up here in my head thinking, trying to think myself better and intellectualizing the program of action. And really, it's the opposite of that. This is just, for me, this is simply doing these things consistently over time. That's what gives me that relationship with God. I come to depend on those actions. I come to depend on God.
Bottom paragraph, 98. Now the domestic problem. There may be divorce, separation, or just strained relations. When your prospect has made such reparation as he can to his family and has thoroughly explained to them the new principles by which he is living, he should proceed to put those principles into action at home. That is, if he is lucky enough to have a home. Though his family may be at fault in many respects, he should not be concerned about that. He should concentrate on his own spiritual demonstration. Argument and fault-finding are to be avoided like the plague. In many homes, this is a difficult thing to do, but it must be done if any results are to be expected. If persisted in for a few months, the effect on a man's family is sure to be great. The most incompatible people discover they have a basis upon which they can meet. Little by little, the family may see their own defects and admit them. They can then be discussed in an atmosphere of helpfulness and friendliness. First, you know, the domestic problem. I remember when I came to Alcoholics Anonymous, my baby's mother, she married another guy, and it really hurt me. It did. I cried, and it just killed me. And I remember talking to my sponsor about it, and he told me one thing. He said, "You had a shot, you blew it." And like, I was like, "What a jerk, dude. Like, really? What's wrong with you, man? Like, do you have a child with her? Are you kidding me?" But like, as time went by, I did have a shot and I did blow it. And with that, it actually gave me comfort. He told me, "I don't know what's gonna happen to you in the future. Right now you blew your shot. But maybe if you do this stuff here, next time you get a shot, you won't blow that one. Or maybe you will, who knows?" And that definitely gave me great comfort. Then, you know, with my family, I remember when I got out of rehab, before I'd done anything in Alcoholics Anonymous except do the whole 90 and 90, I grabbed this book, and the only chapter I happened to stumble upon was for the wives. And I went straight home to my dad and said, "You need to read this." Immediately, because like, it totally explained my bad behavior. I loved it. and he wouldn't read it. It just sat there. The book just sat there. And I mean, I'm not reading the book, but at least he could read the book. Come on now. And I'm like, man, and he couldn't. But then, you know, I started actually doing some actions. And I remember my sister came home, and like, when my sister would come in the house and me and her would be in the same room, the temperature would drop like 3 degrees. Mm-hmm. She couldn't stand me, the things I put my dad through. And I don't know what happened. I wasn't told to make amends, and I really didn't make amends. I was just like, "Hey, you think I could talk to you for a second?" And I just said, "You know, I'm taking these steps. I'm trying to live this new way of life. And you know, I mean, I was wrong for a lot of the things I did." And she stopped me right there, and she's like, "I see something's happening." And like that year, she told me she wanted me to come to Alabama and spend Christmas with her, and I was like, holy crap, this stuff really does work. One more time, because I need to see some results. If I just sat around and didn't see any results, I'll go do something else. But it did, and it was quick. And you know, and some things with her is like, you know, it said don't concentrate about that, you know, I should worry about my own spiritual demonstration. She has a huge resentment towards my mom. She always said when she dies, she's going to go put chains around her grave, because that's what they used to do in Salem to the witches, to keep them in the grave. And I listened to her, and I'm not like, man, that's a sick way of thinking. you really got some bad resentments. And that's because, dude, she's a normal person. Or maybe she isn't, I don't know, but that's cool. I just listened to her and let her go on about it. And today, and I love how it says, you know, I just need to concentrate on my own spiritual demonstration. Call her every once in a while, you know, talk to her, let her talk. And for that, you know, I made that relationship amazing. And over here, I can't really talk much about divorce, never been married, afraid of commitment. Yeah, it's funny, you know, I got sober and I like totally fell in love with my family, and I like wanted to be the perfect son, and then I got sober for a little while. And then all of a sudden I started looking at my parents' defects, like they watch Fox News too much. They're freaking they are conservative Republicans. They have no clue. They are lazy and they are hoarders. And like it's funny because I'll have these thoughts, and these people have bailed me out of so many situations. What? And I'll have these thoughts and I'll look at them and they'll be sitting downstairs watching Fox News, where they've been there for about 6 hours, just watching it. St. Patrick, come here, let me talk to you about Obama. And I'm like, geez. And I'm like, and you know, like Graham was saying, you know, I go to a meeting, and I carry this message, and I stay after, and I talk to a new guy. And then I would go back home, and I'm like, God, I love you guys. And they're still sitting there watching Fox News, wanting me to talk to them about Obama. But something changes when I take these actions. When I work on my own spirituality, something changes. They magically turn into something else. They turn into my loving parents that cared for me, that have been through the ringer with me. But it takes something like that, me getting out of my selfish way, to go and to be able to see the truth again, to be able to get my perspective right. That's all I got on that one.
Thank you. Yeah, and my experience with this is that I really badly damaged my relationships with both my parents. You know, what I'm about to tell you really is true. I went. My mother suggested I move to Japan, and she did. And I did move to Japan, and I got sober there. And I went home at about 18 months sober. And my parents have a house which has a front room, and the front room has the nicest furniture in the house. Nobody ever really goes in there. And this is where like guests would come in when people come to their house. And in there they have these portrait pictures. They have four children. I'm three out of four. I'm the only boy. And on the mantelpiece in that room, at that time my two elder sisters were both married. And there was a picture of my elder sister Moira on her wedding day in a beautiful frame, one of my sister Leslie on her wedding day in a beautiful frame, and a picture of me with bags leaving home, going to Japan in a frame, I'm not kidding, on the mantelpiece beside my sisters. And I was like offended. Like he was saying, I'm like, what? And then, you know, I was always told by my sponsor that really it's my family don't need to believe I'm alcoholic. I made amends to my parents, and they were horrified. They were like, you're not an alcoholic. You just had a rough couple of years. And after some of the stuff I did to them, I won't get into it, but I could talk for hours about very, very difficult situations that I put my parents through. And then they were like horrified that I'm going to AA. Oh my goodness, he's going to AA. It's terrible. So I have this thing where I want you to understand me. It's really the opposite from what I'm supposed to be doing in AA. I just want to be understood. Understand me. Because I'm so selfish. It's all about me, and you need to understand me. And I'll tell you all about me, how I feel, and why I did all that bad stuff to you. Because it wasn't really my fault. I'm an alcoholic. And AA is really the opposite to that. And this guy, Lance, who was my sponsor, said, just shut up. Nobody wants to hear about AA and your family. How about you just drink a big cup of shut up? And why don't you try talking to your parents and asking them how they're doing and see what you can do to be helpful to them instead of talking about your favourite subject, yourself, and how it wasn't your fault. So I really needed to kind of hit the reset button on those relationships and just shut up. Nobody trusted me or anything that came out of this mouth. I'm such a liar, you know, and I really did a lot of damage to my relationships with my sisters. We're still not really that close today. I mean, I live 3,000 miles away from them. That doesn't help, but they're not exactly burning my phone up. And again, it was pointed out to me that I did a lot to damage those relationships, and if I want to have a relationship with my sisters, I need to take the lead. So I need to call my sisters. And if I want to have a relationship with my parents, I need to take the lead. I need to call them. And so I either do that or I don't. It's up to me. But so that's been my take on that, and I have the same experience as him. I'm very judgmental in general, you know. I love to judge people. It's like my hobby, you know. I just like to sit back and say, ah, here's some reasons why this person sucks, you know. It's like my default. My brain just automatically goes there. I don't even need to try. I'm really good at it. I'm really good at judging people. And I didn't realize that part of what's wrong with me is I have really, really chronic low self-esteem. I've always had it. And what I'm doing in that process is I'm putting you down to build myself up, to make myself feel a little bit better. That's why I do it. But I don't care. That's why I do it. I'm still going to do it. And one of the favorite people for me to judge is my wife, Heather. And my mother-in-law and my father-in-law. Those are like my three top judges, if that's a word. Those are the people I like to really get in on. Let's really drill down on their defects and how they're wrong. I love it. So that's my natural condition, you know. So my wife's maybe cooked dinner and we're sitting down with our kids, our beautiful, cute little kids. And in my head, I'm like, who cooked this? You know, and then off it goes in my head. And I really, really struggle with that at times to this day, with that judgment. And it's especially in those relationships I'm close to. So, I mean, judging people in AA, that's just a given, right? I know none of you do that, but I do that a lot. But really, the theme it's trying to talk about in here, and that I try to apply in my life, the first thing is I try not to verbalize those judgments to my wife. That's a bad idea. And I have guys in AA that I can talk to about that, and I can say some prayers, and I can try to get away from that without letting it spoil the time that we have together. So there's some things I can do there. And try to apply these principles in my life. Try to be helpful. Try to act opposite to what I'm thinking and how I'm feeling. You know, so I'm resentful at my father-in-law. I ask him how he's doing, and I smile and say, it's great to see you. How are you doing today? What did you do this weekend? And just start talking, you know, and try to get him to talk about himself. And this really is about persistence. This is the long haul. I want everything just to be, whoa, magically transformed. And now everything's good. The last 10 or 12 years of drunken debauchery, during which I made your life a living hell, let's just not focus on that. Let's just focus on me and how good I'm doing and how lucky you are that I'm in your life. So, you know, it's exactly the same thing. And the other thing I want to say, and then I'll be quiet about this, is that this idea of helpful and friendly, you know, and that's a couple of words that when I'm saying my prayers in the morning, I can think about that. You know, how can I be helpful today? Am I being helpful to my wife? Am I being friendly to my wife? So I just went up to this training in New Jersey and they did a class photograph, right? So there's 40 people there and I'm over on this side of the photograph and I'm standing there and I think I'm having a good time. I'm pretty relaxed. I'm in the back row because I'm tall. I'm standing there with the guys cutting it up. The photographer says this to me. He goes, oh, you. And he's pointing at me. And I'm like, yeah. He says, you look hostile. I'm not kidding. And I'm like, what? So is that what I'm bringing to my wife across the breakfast table? You know, I don't even necessarily know that I'm doing that. You know, and sometimes people say that, you know, are you happy? And I say, yeah, and they're like, well, why don't you tell your face, you know? So I really do tend to be, you know, judgmental, glum, resentful. That's my kind of default where I go to, and it's very important. And where's the joy in that? You know, where's the joy in that? I have to live today. I have to live today. I can't be glum. I have to live. I have to have the best day I can. And I love that bit where it talks about Rule 62, you know, don't take yourself so seriously. And I love to focus in on me, my judgments of you, and my wife's faults, and my family's faults. But the bottom line is, like Patrick said, the truth of the matter is I've never had it so good. And if I really can just stand back from myself for a moment and look at my life today, it's clear that I am not in charge of it, because I don't do that. I put a old sheet over the window and listen to Pink Floyd and smoke weed and get drunk. That's what I do. And I'm not doing that today. Something's happening. Okay.
All right. Page 100, the second paragraph. or I guess the first. Both you and the new man must walk day by day in the path of spiritual progress. If you persist, remarkable things will happen. When we look back, we realize that the things which came to us when we put ourselves in God's hands were better than anything we could have planned. Follow the dictates of a higher power, and you will presently live in a new and wonderful world, no matter what your present circumstance. Well, that's fantastic. My home group reads this at the end of every meeting. And it is, you know, every time I hear it, and I like, you know, both you and the new man. What do you mean? I can't just do this by myself? What about me? Just me? I have to have, got to bring someone along with me for me to have this remarkable things that will happen? And that's the truth. I do. Because if it's just me, I'm just selfish. Just like Graham said, you know, it's all about me. If I don't have that new man walking around with me, acting crazy, then, but you know, if I persist, and you know, for me persisting, like, what is that? Going to meetings, even to sometimes I'll go to meetings to this day and I don't want to talk to anybody. I want to listen to myself share, spit out some spiritual wisdom, and then I want to leave. Mm-hmm. And luckily I was taught, you know, I was brought into this program. They told me, you know what, screw 90 and 90. You need to do 30 and 30. And I'm like, what's 30 and 30? And they're like, 30 minutes before and 30 minutes after. I'm not very good at the 30 minutes before, I'll be honest with you. But I've always been able to uphold the 30 minutes after. Stand around, listen to that new guy. They told me, you know, I remember we'd stand out there for hours in the freezing cold. And person that was definitely helped me a lot in this journey, he'd always say the same thing. He'd be like, looks like we're too tired to think, too tired to drink. And how true was that? And yeah, I can't feel my feet too. We can add that one. But we'd stand out there, and I definitely wasn't gonna take a drink that night. And we'd find someone, and we'd just 12-step them, and we'd listen to their problems, not for very long, but we'd listen for a little bit. And then, you know, we'd tell them about what we got here. And I like also how it says, follow the dictates of a higher power. What's the dictates of a higher power? Anything that's not the dictates of me. It's like, this is, when I came in this program, I figured out it's like opposite land. Like, whatever I'm thinking, like, do the opposite. I'm like, that's crazy, but it's really come true. My head, my brain tells me every week, every Tuesday, don't go to your home group. Relax, you work a lot, you do not need to go there, they will be fine. And I'm like, all right, I gotta go to my home group. And it happens every Tuesday. It's like, it's crazy. Every time I got a service commitment, don't go do that, don't, it's stupid. They don't even like you there, they don't even wanna listen. All you do, you and the minority opinion, they're always going because you just want to go against everything everyone says. Just don't even go and stir the pot. Stay home, watch a movie, eat some Chinese food, relax. But I go, and that's it. You know, I persist. If I persist and I just keep going, and it's even good, bad, or indifferent, that's how I drink. That is how I drink, good, bad, or indifferent. And so I have to do this. These actions, good, bad, or indifferent. Sucky day, go. Good day, go. Indifferent, go. And you know, and for that, it's true. It is, it's wonderful, wonderful world. And no matter what my present circumstances, I don't know, I've had some crazy present circumstances in AA, and I didn't really feel like it was a wonderful world. But I did keep persisting, and I'm here today sober. Thanks.
Thank you. Yeah, I think, you know, the important thing to take away for me out of this idea of helping other people. And that just really runs counter to everything that I know about myself. I have all these plans for my life. And let me tell you, they don't involve hanging out with you in AA. I'm a big deal. And I've always been a big deal. I'm very smart. And just kind of wonderful, really, and just too good for all of this. I don't have time for this, and I've got some really big plans. And I've always been like that my whole life. You know, I've always had this very active fantasy life, which bore no resemblance to my actual life. And I like to hang out there because it's better than real life. Who wouldn't? And so when I came to AA, What I want is I want a bunch of people to help me. Like, you guys are all therapists and you're going to fix me, you know? And I can just kind of suck the life out of you. Bing! Ah, oh, that's better. Like some sort of spiritual vampire, you know? Running around, sucking the life out of people. And that's kind of what I want to do. I want you to help me. I want you to help me because I don't feel good. I'm not drinking and it sucks. And I want you to fix me. And I really am grateful to this guy who was my sponsor called Lance, who stood up to that. He didn't listen to that. He didn't listen to me demanding to be fixed. And he said, no, you got it all wrong. And I don't like that when you tell me I got it wrong. The only help you're ever going to get is by helping other people. That's how you get help in Alcoholics Anonymous. Nobody here can help you. You're screwed. You're a hopeless alcoholic. The only help you're ever going to get is by helping other people. And that's just absurd to me. It's just like, that doesn't work. Are you crazy? That's nonsense. You don't understand. And just him holding that line with me and saying, no, you don't understand. And it goes back to the great delusion that I suffer from, which is I'm like other people. And really, I can manage my own life. I just have some problems with that drinking gig. But really, I got it. I got my plans. I know what to do. There's a lot of evidence that those plans never, ever, ever one time work out. But that doesn't stop me from trying. And I have this ongoing joke with a friend of mine about the relief that I get from making plans. So I'll have like this thing I need to do. So instead of just going and doing the thing, I'll make a plan to do the thing and then I feel much better. But the thing's still not done, right? So I get such relief from planning. I'm going to keep doing it. So what remarkable things have happened? My life's been completely transformed. I haven't wanted to drink for a long time. Being sober is not like what I thought it would be. I thought being sober meant I would be good and spiritual. And maybe kind of like a cross between Jesus and Buddha, something like that. Somewhere in that ballpark, you know. But that hasn't happened yet. So how do I put myself in God's hands? What does that mean? I mean, is there some big dude with big hands and I'm going to put myself in them? Is that what we're talking about here? I don't know. That's what it sounds like. The dictates of a higher power. What are we talking about? That's kind of weird. The dictates of a higher power. And the wonderful thing about AA as I've experienced it in my life is that it's an intensely practical spiritual path. It's very, very practical. And this putting myself in God's hands, for me, how that came about in my life was taking these simple actions imperfectly, one day at a time, going to meetings, getting a sponsor, taking the steps, saying some simple prayers, joining a home group, participating in the home group, trying to get out of myself by helping other people, however crazy I might be at the time. And my experience ties in exactly with what Patrick said. I've had some fantastic highs in Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, I've traveled all over the world. I've met some wonderful people. I've had some fantastic experiences in Alcoholics Anonymous. And I've also had some tremendous lows in sobriety in Alcoholics Anonymous. A brain damaged child, a vicious custody battle, losing jobs and losing house. All these things have happened in sobriety. There's really been highs and lows. But the bottom line is the constant through all of that has been taking these simple actions imperfectly but consistently over time. And when I see people that are further down the path in sobriety than me, that's what they're doing. They're getting out of themselves by helping other people. And they're doing other stuff as well, but that's the core of what they're doing. And so I suppose over time my faith comes that is going to see me through and that's enough. Because if you're like me, I'm a fruitcake in here. And I start feeling uncomfortable and I'm like, AA's not working, AA's not working, AA's not enough. Those people at that meeting said that I need this, I need therapy, I need this, I need pills, I need this. And I'm like a frightened little rabbit. Ooh. You know? And I start hearing that stuff and I'm thinking, well, I feel really bad. So maybe they're right, this AA's not working because I feel bad, it can't be working. So I need something else. And what I've found in my life is that what I need, what me, and I'm just talking for me, I'm not talking for anybody else, this is me. What I need at that point is to step back with a sponsor and take a look at what I'm doing. And you know what I usually find when I do that? I'm not going to a lot of meetings. I'm two-stepping. I'm doing the first half of step one, and I'm carrying the message. I'm not doing any work on the steps in between. I'm maybe not that excited about my home group. Those people kind of suck. And what's my prayer life like? Is it a quick, God help me in the morning? Or maybe I'm not even praying at all. I'm just thinking in my head about something, I don't know. Am I getting out of myself by helping people? Am I doing what Patrick said? Has AA just become a way for me to feel better? I need to go to two meetings this week so I feel better. Check, check. Get in quick, get out quick. I'm done. Now I can get back to my life. That's usually what I find's happening when I feel bad. Usually, not always, but usually. And when I'm in a kind of funk. So, there you go. That's my experience.
Alright, bottom paragraph, page 100. Assuming we are spiritually fit, we can do all sorts of things alcoholics are not supposed to do. People have said we must not go where liquor is served. We must not have it in our homes. We must shun friends who drink. We must avoid moving pictures which show drinking scenes. We must not go into bars. Our friends must hide their balls if we go to their houses. We mustn't think or be reminded about alcohol at all. Our experience shows us that that is not necessarily so. We meet these conditions every day. An alcoholic who cannot meet them still has an alcoholic mind. There is something the matter with his spiritual status. His only chance for sobriety would be someplace like the Greenland ice cap. And even there, an Eskimo might turn up with a bottle of scotch and ruin everything. Ask any woman who has sent her husband to distant places on the theory he would escape the alcohol problem. Keep going. It's fantastic. I remember when I first came to AA, I had a job. I was bartending. And that's what I knew how to do. I went to school when I was in Florida. I went to bartending school. And when I was in Maine, I worked on lobster boats. And there's not a huge lobster industry here. So I bartend. And I remember I'd go to meetings, and there would be old people there. And I'm not going to call them old-timers, because there are some people that are just old. So they're just old. They get older every time I see them. And they'd tell me, they'd be like, son, you're on dangerous grounds. You need to get a different job. And I was buying into it, but I don't know, this was paying my bills. And then I got with a sponsor, and he said, dude, if you quit that job, how are you going to pay your child support? Like, come on now, let's get realistic. He said, let's not even worry about that. You got so many issues here. He's like, and I don't really have any experiences with any of your issues. I've never gone to prison. I've never had a kid. I've never been a bartender, so I don't have any experience with any of that. He said, but I have experience with this. And he told me, when I do this wholeheartedly, all those little problems will fix themselves. And I remember going into work when I first started out, and the tin would be there, and I'd make a drink, and I was like, oh man. Because I usually would like turn around from the guest at the bar and be like, and with whatever was left. And I was worried, but it didn't happen. It didn't. I made their drinks. I made drinks that I like to make for them, that I'd like to drink myself. And I did that, and I was like, this is crazy. And I just kept persisting, doing this. And it wasn't a problem. I had friends, and like I wanted to still hang out with them. And I know I hear it all the time, like my friends when I was drinking, they all sucked. But my friends were actually pretty cool. They actually saved me from, they would drive me a lot of times when I was too drunk. They would let me stay at their houses and stuff. I mean, they weren't the greatest citizens, I guess, but but they helped me out, you know? And I didn't want to just push them to the side. I still wanted to hang out with them. And I remember, like, we'd go to bars, and I'd go and I'd DD with them. I didn't have no license. I mean, I didn't really get that far through the steps yet. But and I'd tell my sponsor, and he'd say, go ahead, man. You got my number if you need me. Give me a call. And I did, and I got to learn that lesson on my own, because it would always suck, because I'd go out with them, and at like 11 o'clock, they'd all be hugging, and like, it'd be fantastic, and I'm like, man. And then I'd have to tell myself in my head, wait till 1, wait till 1, wait till 1. Sure enough, 1 o'clock, girls crying in the corner, these two are fighting, they're freaking screaming, they're fighting over keys, and I'm like, yes, that's why I don't do this. That's why, thank you. Because if they kept on hugging all night and just the camaraderie, I might have joined them. But luckily, 1 o'clock would always hit. And with that, you know, I came to that decision on my own. I was out on Military Highway at the Stone House. And I was like, this just isn't me anymore. I just don't want to do this anymore. And I took my friend's car, and he got a ride somewhere else. And I drove home, and I wasn't me. Wasn't my game anymore. But I got to learn that myself. Someone didn't have to tell me that. Because, like, you know, in our literature, it tells me I'm defiant. If you tell me I can't do something, I'm going to do it. But if you tell me, you know what, go ahead, and if you need my help, call me, no matter what. That, like, that worked for me. And I also remember, you know, I had a friend up in Maine. He used to always tell me, he'd be like, come up and chill with me, man, come up. And I was like, no, I don't think so. Because I knew what they were going to do. We were going to sit in his living room, he's going to smoke pot, and they were going to drink. And that's what was going to happen. And finally I got the call, and he said, you know, my dad's dying. He didn't have much longer to live. I said, all right, I'll be up there. And I went up there, and sure enough, what'd they do? They sat in the living room, smoked weed, and drank. They told me before I came through the God, they're like, before I came through the door, they're like, Patrick, we don't want to hear any of that Jesus stuff that you... And I'm like, what are you talking about? I don't talk about Jesus. I don't know it. They had no idea, but, you know, I got to spend time with his dad before he died. I got to take some pictures. He played a big role in my life when I was a kid. And I went up there when the time was right. When I had something to do, you know, and I was safe and protected. Like it says, everything in this book, like I wouldn't stand behind this book so much if it didn't unfold exactly as I read it. Page by page, it unfolded in my life. You know, back when it talks about the whole recoiling from a hot flame, I remember I was bartending at work, and I came into work, and there was this lady sitting at the end of the bar. She had a Cosmopolitan in front of her, and it was dark red. And my boss was behind the bar, and I'm like, dude, you gonna put any alcohol? It looks like just pure cranberry juice. What are you doing? And he's like, I know. And he had a mixing tin in his hand. He said, I know, but I got this one here. He's like, try it. And I was like, whoa, bro, I don't drink, dude. And I recoiled, just like it said in the book. And I was like, holy cow, it's exactly what it says will happen, and it happens. And to me, I'm amazed to this day, you know? I can go anywhere. Any free man can go. I really can, as long as I follow a few simple rules. What's that? Go help out God's kid, trust God. Clean house, bam. Do those three things, you can go anywhere. And, you know, I hear it all the time, wherever I go, and a lot of times it's from newcomers, but they're like, you bartend, dude? Really? And I'm like, you gotta quit doubting the power of God, man. You gotta, you can do it too. If you can't, then that's cool, but, you know, I can do whatever I want just because I take these actions. Thanks.
Thank you. We'll just finish up with this sentence on page 103. And it's not exactly sure where it is. It's actually the very last in italics on page 103. And it just says, after all, our problems were of our own making. Bottles were only a symbol. Besides, we've stopped fighting anybody or anything, we have to. And, you know, it's good for me to remember that. And going through the steps, I was turned from a blamer and a victim into understanding that the problems in my life and the way I reacted to them, it was me. It wasn't my parents. It wasn't my upbringing. It was me. I brought this upon myself, and my perception of things the way they are, that's my problem. And bottles were only a symbol. I love that. I don't have a drink problem. We've got wonderful news for you tonight. If you've got a drink problem, there's the door, goodbye. You don't ever have to sit through these meetings ever again. Just don't drink, you'll be wonderfully happy. The problem that I have is when I stop drinking, I start feeling and thinking, and I hate being sober. That's the problem. So AA is not about stopping drinking. AA is about living sober. Living sober. And the final thing, stop fighting anybody or anything. I'm not going to make any outrageous claims about that, but I get the idea. But it says there, you know, we have to. And that really is an attitude that at times in my life I've been able, when the heat's really on me, to say, you know what? Here's the worst case scenario. I lay it out before you, God. And if that's what's to come to pass, give me the willingness to accept that that's your will. And let me be okay with that, you know. And I seem to have been able to get through on that basis. You got anything, a few words, or if you want to talk about that? Got like another minute or so before we wind up.
I just think, you know, the whole we've stopped fighting anybody or anything. I haven't hit that spiritual mountaintop yet. But, and I did like how, you know, you said, when it's bad enough, because I still like to get in little squabbles because I love to be right. And I don't have a lot of experience with being right. And today, because of this fellowship and these steps, I have more experience with it. And so, I mean, I don't want to turn down a good chance of being right, you know?
Yeah.
But you, like you said, the big things, it is, you know, I quit the debating society. I'm good. And be able to walk away. I've only gotten one fight since I've been sober. One physical altercation. That's amazing. I have 7 assault charges, 1 on a law enforcement officer. I just love to fight. I just loved it. Not when I'm sober, but when I'm drunk. When I'm sober, I mean, if I have to, I have to. I really don't want to get my nose broken. But, you know, from a kid that just fought everything, just went around punching holes in walls, everybody saying to go to anger management, and I haven't punched a hole in a wall. I haven't had to spackle nothing. And I didn't go to anger management. All I did was get God in my life. And today I have a purpose. Thanks.
Thanks for sharing, Patrick. That brings the talking to an end. So I'm going to pass these baskets. Thank you. Self-supporting. The seventh tradition states, every AA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. While contributions cover each group's rent and other expenses, the seventh tradition is essential at every level of AA service. It's both a privilege and a responsibility for groups and members to ensure not only their group, but also their intergroup and central office, local services, district, area, and the general service office remain self-supporting. This keeps AA free of outside influences that might divert us from our primary purpose, to help the alcoholic who still suffers. The amount of our contribution is secondary to the spiritual connection that unites all groups around the world. I'll start off the announcement section of the meeting with this announcement here. So next week, in here at 6 o'clock, our supper and a speaker meeting kicks off. The eating starts at 6. It's a potluck dinner. Feel free to bring some food if you like. If not, that's okay. And the speaker's at 7 o'clock. It's a guy called Nathan from Washington, D.C. And it's here next Monday night. Everybody's welcome to come along and enjoy. Are there any other announcements at this time? Yes.
Hi, I'm Yasmin. I'm an alcoholic.
Yes. Hi.
There's a new meeting starting tomorrow night at 7 o'clock. It's a step meeting. It's going to be reading of the from the 12 and 12, followed by a speaker and then a group share. It's at 7 o'clock. It's at 212 West 29th Street. That's 29th between Omohundro and Llewellyn. There are cats in the house. They will not be in the meeting because it's a closed meeting and they're not alcoholic. But take an allergy pill if you are allergic and bring a 12 and 12 with you.
Okay, thank you. Any other announcements? John?
I'm John. I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, John.
Hello, John.
If you're interested, I am selling raffle tickets. They are $1, and this is for the Virginia Beach Oceanfront Conference, which is in February. It's a weekend for two for the entire conference. They're only $1. Come see me if you want a ticket, or if you want 40, I've got. Thanks.
Thanks, John. Wild.
Drawing is Monday. Sorry.
Hey, Wild.
Hey, Wild.
Okay, thanks. Anybody else? Okay, good. Simple Actions is a home group. If you're interested in joining our home group, please see one of us after the meeting. Home group members, please raise your hand. Newcomers, is there anybody here tonight in their first 30 days of sobriety?
Hi.
We'd like to welcome you. If you want to say your first name, you don't have to, it's up to you.
Hey, Jeb.
Welcome. I'd like to point out that literature is available. Please see me or any home group member after the meeting. It's over there by the coffee. So also, we also have a website, and it's simpleactions.net, and the website address is also on the back table, and you can access the reading materials we use at the meeting, and all the meetings are recorded, and the recordings are also on the website. Sponsorship in AA is yours for the asking. We urge you, do not delay. Would anyone willing to be a sponsor, please raise their hand. Thank you. So thanks to all who participated. After we clean up, all are invited and encouraged to continue the conversation on the step discussed tonight. All are welcome to attend the meeting after the meeting, which will be held at the Mexican restaurant on 21st and Colonial. Everybody's welcome, and please come, because it's really easy just to walk out that door and go back into my life. It's much more convenient for me to do that. I'd really like to just do that. But you know what? I'm going to go out for dinner. Why? Because when I got sober, people went out to dinner and listened to me. And it's very important to have a meeting after the meeting. Isolation is the enemy. Okay, anyway, off the soapbox. And somebody has volunteered to read the last two paragraphs on page 164. John.
I am John, an alcoholic.
Hey, John.
Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order. But obviously you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit. You will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until then.
Thanks for reading, John. For those that care to join us, we're going to form a circle and close the meeting with the Lord's Prayer. Thank you. Thanks, man.
Thank you.
It's a circle of life.
Safe driving school.
Yay! Okay. There you go. Come on, stretch. Our Father,
who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done, on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. For thine is the kingdom, the power, and the glory, forever and ever.
Amen.
Amen.
Thank you.